Now, we're studying the Creed, and we're talking about it, and we're seeing how it's this oldest statement of the foundational beliefs that define the Christian faith. And it begins by proclaiming, I believe in God the Father Almighty, creator of heaven and earth. And that's a place that we would expect it to begin, this beginning of statement of not only that we believe in God, but we believe him to be the creator. And we shouldn't be surprised, because that's where the Bible itself begins. In Genesis chapter 1, the very first words of the Bible, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. The very first truth, the foundational truth that the whole Bible teaches, is this idea of God's creation. And likewise, we could then go to the New Testament. We see the Apostle John, when he begins his story of Jesus in the Gospel of John, he likewise begins with the same idea. Look at John chapter 1. John starts and he says, in the beginning was the Word, speaking of Jesus, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was in the beginning with God. All things were made through him, and without him, not anything has been made that was made. And so again, he starts there, and this all clearly demonstrates that this whole idea of creation is at the foundation of everything that the Bible teaches and everything that Christians believe. Now, this is hard subject, because we have to acknowledge that this whole story of creation is under attack in our culture. Many people insist that science has established that the world we live in is the result of evolution, not God's work of creation. People will then often argue that the Bible is anti-science. People who believe in creation only do so by ignoring the evidence of science to hold on to this spiritual superstition. You know, I think this little cartoon kind of sums up this whole idea of what people think. That here you have all the evidence of science on one side, and here you have someone saying, you know, all I have is my faith, and my faith, well, that overwhelms all the evidence of science. And that's common. But I want to just state that that's a total misrepresentation of the whole issue. I believe, and we're going to try to establish even a little bit briefly this week and next week, that the evidence of science is heavily on the side of creationism. And we're going to try to explain that today. And I can give you another little cartoon, just more fun. This is simple. You know, it's one snowman to the other. Don't be absurd. Nobody made us. We evolved by chance from snowflakes. And you look at that, and that's simple, but it says something that is true. And we're going to go way beyond that simplicity this morning, and we're going to tell you, if you want to go deeper, we're going to give you a lot more resources as well. But let me start by looking at this whole relationship between the Bible, between science, and between truth. You see, again, we've stated there's this widely held perception that there's a conflict between Bible and science. And especially when it comes to the question here of the origin of the universe, it's widely held that the evidence of science is heavily supporting the side of evolution. That's, again, that cartoon that we saw a couple minutes ago. And I'll talk to well-meaning Christians who will kind of give evidence that they deep down kind of believe this. And so they will say, make statements, well, you know, I believe the Bible. The Bible said we're created. I don't need science. You know, I'm not going to look there. And basically what they're saying is that, well, I kind of know that science says one thing, but I believe the Bible regardless of what science says. And often we see science, therefore, as a threat. And then what we do is we say, well, I believe this, and we leave the whole debate, the whole discussion to people who start with the assumption that the Bible isn't true, that there isn't a God. And then, therefore, they go and interpret science. They interpret it according to they interpret the facts to fit their opinions. And since Christians are removed from the discussion, you know, you have only those who are pro-evolution, anti-God, making the arguments, and then they say, well, anybody who disagrees with us is anti-science, and Christians further withdraw from the discussion, and that's kind of what's happened. But I want to be clear, God doesn't call us to withdraw from science. It's not something that should in any way scare us. God calls us to an intelligent faith that uses our mind. And so when we look at this, we've got to be clear that when the Bible starts by saying, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth, it's the very first words of the Bible. When we hear the Apostles' Creed, I believe in God the Father Almighty, creator of heavens and earth, what he's saying here is something that's a claim of universal truth. It's not just a religious claim, it's a claim of truth. Now, again, I'll hear people say, well, the Bible isn't a book of science, you know, so it's not making scientific claims, and it's just a religious claim. And I'll hear people say that all the time, again, well-meaning Christians, but that's garbage. Again, what you've got to realize is it's a statement of truth. It's a statement about what is true, about what actually happened in the beginning of the universe. It's a statement that's historically true, that's scientifically true, that's spiritually true. You see, what we've got to do is we've got to establish something about the whole nature of truth. There aren't different kinds of truth. There aren't religious truths and spiritual truths and scientific truths. Truth is a description of what is real. It's a description of what's true. And there can't be some things that are true in one area. Well, this is true scientifically, and this is true spiritually. No, that's foolishness. No, there's a statement of truth. Either something is true because it establishes and states what is real, or it is false. And if it is true in one area, then it's true in all areas. And if it's false, it's false in all areas. And so when we look at this, we've got to realize that what are we talking about? We're talking about different aspects, but a claim about creation or evolution is making a scientific, historical, and spiritual claim. Both of them are making claims across the board. Science, what is that? That's the design of nature. Well, what best describes nature and how things were designed historically? What actually happened? What actually were the events that were the cause historically of the origin of the universe? Spiritual. There's spiritual realities beyond what we can see and understand in our natural world. And both are making claims about spiritual realms. Now let me look briefly at the two sides of the debates and in that what they're making these claims of truth. Again, when we talk about those who believe in evolution, you know, generally we're talking about, you know, we may hear that talk about evolution or Darwinism or neo-Darwinism. But basically behind that theory, there's a philosophical belief. It's not science, it's philosophy. It's a philosophical assumption, a naturalistic philosophical worldview, a belief in what I'm going to call materialism. And materialism is basically this, that the only thing that exists is matter. And so it's only what we see, only what we can manipulate, only what we can test, that's the only reality. Now, that's not a view that comes from science. You see, it's making a spiritual statement that there isn't anything spiritual. I can't prove it, but I'm making that assumption. See, evolution is not primarily a theory that is based on scientific evidence. It is primarily a conclusion that is based on materialistic assumptions. And that's what you have to realize. It springs from this materialistic philosophy, starting with the assumption that the only possible reality is material things that we can see and manipulate. It means that only the natural world exists. And so what we can see, that's the only thing that there, not only that there is, but the only thing that there can be. So we're not willing to even consider a possibility that there's something outside of nature, outside of what we can see or explain. And so if you go to a university and you hear a science class, I mean, that's what's being taught. Yes, it's being Darwinism, evolution is being taught, but at the core, it's being driven by this whole idea of materialism, this philosophy. Now, to help explain this, I'm going to go a little deeper, and I'm going to use a video by a group called Science Uprising. And I'm using only a part of this, and I'd encourage if you want to see more of it, you could go to, there's information in the notes about going to see more, and they've got all kinds of resources there. But what you're going to see in this video is you'll hear experts explain how the foundation of evolution is not science, it's materialism. In fact, it often ignores the evidence of science.
Frustrating is that in the modern age, people often try to identify this philosophical idea of materialism with the practice of natural science itself. But there's no reason these two things would go together. Natural science is just a formal way to discover truths about nature.
So how does science discover the truth about nature?
Test ideas by experiment and observation. Build on those ideas that pass the test. Reject the ones that fail. follow the evidence wherever it leads and question everything. Question everything.
Well, who's doing that?
Who's doing that?
Who's setting up these experiments? What is an experiment? What is an observation? What constitutes evidence? Oddly, the scientific materialist has to deny the existence of scientists.
The self is an illusion.
Well, what is not an illusion is the bigotry and intolerance of the scientific community.
I want to put on the table not why 85% of the National Academy rejects God. I want to know why 15% don't.
Any view that challenges materialism is punished. It's this materialist dogma that keeps many scientists behind a mask. But some scientists are willing to speak up about where the evidence leads.
I was brought up with materialist viewpoints all the way through high school and college and medical school. You get inundated with scientific viewpoints that have a materialist bias.
The cosmos is all that is, all that is.
And it's all just mechanical and blind and purposeless at the bottom.
The deeper I looked into the science, the more I realized what a catastrophe for science materialism and atheism really is.
Science delusion is the belief that science already understands the nature of reality in principle, leaving only the details to be filled in. It's the kind of belief system of people who say, I don't believe in God, I believe in science.
Materialism is not science. It's simply a worldview that fails to explain or even consider the most profound, interesting, and beautiful aspects of human reality. Materialists are free to preach their religion, but they should stop pretending it's science. We want to follow the evidence, wherever it leads, and decide for ourselves.
See, I think what you see there is that, again, it's not science, it's a philosophy. And it's masquerading as science. It's behind this mask. And then if you have anybody that disagrees with it, well, they get fired, they lose their job as anti-scientists. Not because the evidence doesn't say it, but because they start with this presupposition that if you leave open the possibility of something beyond nature, well, therefore we're going to reject you. And therefore you have even, tremendous numbers of people that look at this and there's evidence for God, for creation, but if you stand up, you might lose your job. Because they really don't want to know the truth. And where the one guy says that materialism is a tragedy for science, that's why. Because it's actually squashing the truth to fit preconceived conceptions. Now, as Christians, we don't believe in naturalism and materialism. We believe that there is more to the universe than just the natural world. We believe that there is a God who exists outside of nature. And he's not the result of natural causes. But he existed before nature, before all the stuff in the universe, and he spoke it into existence. And so, yes, we look at the material world, and we look at that, and we look at the laws, but we also believe that there is not only the natural, there's a supernatural outside of nature. And what we're going to see is that if you start with the possibility, not even the assumption that that's true, the possibility it's true, then what you're going to find is that nature, the story of nature is far more consistent with the idea that there is a God outside of nature, a creator, that a God who is totally consistent but goes beyond. So what is the Bible then in its teachings along these ideas? The foundational truth of the whole message of the Bible is what it says in the very beginning. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. In the beginning, before there was anything else, before there was nature, before there was material, before there was even time, there was God. And God spoke at the very beginning of creation of time, and he spoke all those things into existence. And not only does it teach us that God spoke these things into existence, but the Bible actually teaches that we should therefore study and reflect on how God has revealed himself through the Bible, because creation declares his glory. Psalm 119, the heavens declare the glory of God, the sky above proclaim his handiwork, day to day pours out speech, and night to night reveals knowledge. Romans 1 teaches that we're without excuse because we can see God revealing himself in nature. For what can be known to God is plain to them, because God has shown it to them. His invisible attributes, namely his eternal power, divine nature, have been clearly perceived ever since the creation of the world and the things that have been made, so they are without excuse. Now, when you look at this, I think what the Bible is teaching here is that is something that theologians for centuries have held to, is that God has actually revealed himself not only through the Bible, but through nature. Now, it's more perfectly through the Bible, but what we can see is God's revelation of himself through nature, and therefore we should study science. Historically, Christians have been at the root of studying science. It's interesting now that it's perceived as being a conflict. In fact, if you go back historically, back until the 1800s, seminaries were where you go to study science. If you wanted to study science, it was in a seminary because it was perceived as the study of God. It was, you studied science because that's how you studied God's self-revelation. And so when we look at this, we've got to say, okay, how do we understand this? And here's what we need to realize is that the beliefs of evolutionists and creationists are ultimately based on faith. They both are making claims that are of scientific truth, historical truth, spiritual truth. And ultimately, when we look at this, it's not only that all truth is absolute, there are truths across the board, but all of them, there's an element of faith. And so when we look at this, how do we understand? Well, the nature of faith, it isn't this leap into the dark. It isn't to say, well, evidence tells me this, and yet the Bible says this, so I'm going to go against evidence and just hope it's true. No, the Bible never calls us to that. The biblical picture of faith, and you see this historically and scientifically, it's always rooted in truth. And so the Bible goes to great lengths repeatedly to demonstrate that everything that is written is factually true. It's consistent with history. It's consistent with science. And that's why the Bible calls us to look at nature, the facts of God's self-revelation, because the more we do so, the more that we will be led toward him. But while the Bible tells us the truth and God reveals himself especially through nature, the fact is that there are things that God reveals, but we won't understand everything about God. There's an element of faith, but this faith is something that goes beyond what we can prove, but should be consistent with the known evidence. And again, this is not true only of Christians. It's true of evolutionists. You know, they look at it and they have evidence, but there's all kinds of assumptions, starting with the assumption that there is no God. There's all kinds of things that there's holes in their argument that they say, I don't have an explanation. Well, they take these enormous leaps of faith to say, well, I don't see how this is true, but I have to believe. And we're going to see some of those a little bit even briefly today. But you think about Christianity. Likewise, when we take, well, can I go back and historically prove that the resurrection happened? Well, no, but I can look at it and say historically it is the most, the strongest historical event recorded in history as far as the evidence. If you look at the evidence, there's incredible evidence that says that it happened. But I need to make a leap of faith that is consistent with the evidence but goes beyond it. Can I prove that God exists? Can I go back in time and demonstrate without question that there was creation? Well, no, but what I can do is that I can look at the evidence and what's most consistent with the evidence. And what I think we're going to see is this, is that creation is far more consistent with evidence than the story of evolution. And you know what? There are even evolutionary teachers that will admit that to some degree. But you know why they don't? They admit that, okay, there's big holes. But they'll say, we believe this ultimately because we start with materialism. Let me give you an example of this. This is a quote from a guy named Richard Lowenton, a geneticist and one of the world's leaders in evolutionary biology. And he shows this incredible evidence, which is exactly what we're talking about, this bias, this presupposition that starts with materialism, that God is impossible, and therefore we're going to believe in evolution in spite of the evidence that is against us. Look what he says. Our willingness to accept the scientific claims that are against common sense is the key to understanding the real struggle between science and the supernatural. You hear what he's saying? We accept claims that are against common sense. Why? We will take the side of science. Now, when he says science, he's meaning materialism. He's not saying the evidence of science. We will take the side of science in spite of the patent absurdity of some of its constructs. in spite of its failure to fulfill many of its extravagant promises of health and life, in spite of the tolerance of scientific community of an unsubstantiated just-so stories, because we have a prior commitment, a commitment to materialism. Now, he's not saying, when he says we take the side of science, science is provable evidence. And he's saying we take the side of science in spite of all the evidence that proves us wrong. Because it's not science. It's because of this prior commitment to materialism. And so we know God doesn't exist, so we have to find an answer that proves that he doesn't exist, even though all the evidence proves otherwise. He continues, it is not that the method and institutions of science somehow compel us to accept a material explanation for the phenomenal world, but on the contrary, we are forced by our a priori adherence to material causes to create an apparatus of investigation and a set of concepts that produce material explanations, no matter how counterintuitive, no matter how mystifying to the uninitiated. Moreover, that materialism is absolute, for we cannot allow a divine foot in the door. Now, my friends, you hear, see what he's saying? This is a guy in an honest moment that is saying the evidence isn't for them. The only reason they believe it is because they have a preconceived opinion, commitment to materialism. God can't exist, and so therefore God can't exist. Therefore, all the evidence proves the only other option that we must have evolved. Okay, so let's look at this a little bit briefly. I'm not going to get through all my notes this morning. I was optimistic of how much I was going to do. We'll see how far we go. But what I want to do is to spend the rest of the time that we have briefly looking at the claims of evolution versus the claims of creation and put both against the evidence. And again, what we're looking is that I think it's something that is consistent with what the Bible calls us to in Psalm 19. You know, when it says, the heavens declare the glories, we're called to go and look at God's revelation. Now, in this, we're going to look at Scripture and what Scripture says, but I also am going to tell you, I'm going to briefly, and we could go way deeper than I am, we're going to go briefly look at some science and scientific evidence. I know I'm not a science, but I'm going to look at science. Now, some of you that are, you know, my age younger than me and, you know, have kids that you're, you know, younger, you might remember that the big show is Bill Nye, the Science Guy. And well, this morning I'm going to take the role of Pastor Mike, the Science Guy.
Jet Lie with Pastor Mike. Jet Lie with Pastor Mike. Jet Lie with Pastor Mike. DNA is
a property of design.
Mike.
That's awesome. So let's look at this briefly. And again, we're going to go through it real briefly. I'd love to spend more time and give you a chance to dig deeper in that. We're going to share more resources. The stuff that's even on the note allows you to go deeper in some of this. Number one, okay, origin of the universe. Okay, let's look at this. What does the Bible teach? The very first words of the Bible, a foundational truth, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. So God created. Evolution says that in the beginning, there was nothing. And out of that nothing, suddenly there was this huge explosion. And out of that nothing, suddenly everything came to exist. Now, that's the big, you know, often referred to as the Big Bang Theory. Suddenly out of nothing came the vastness of the universe. Now, you know what's really interesting in this? If you go back and study history, you find that through the early 1900s, all evolutionists agreed that what was the reality was what was called the static universe. In other words, they believed that matter was eternal, that the universe had existed forever. And it was always evolving. Now, it was Christian scientists, on the other hand, that said, well, no, matter didn't exist forever. Matter was created by God, by the work of God. And there was one Christian scientist specifically that developed this from the Bible, from the teaching of the Bible, this theory that what we're going to find is that the world, the universe is expanding. He came up with this idea that God created things from a certain space and flung the stars into existence, which is referred to in the Bible. Now, you had evolutionists mocked him. They mocked him. They made up this name for his theory, called it the Big Bang Theory, and they mocked his idea. Now, what's interesting, science then ended up proving that the universe is expanding. And here you have scientists, instead of saying, well, we were wrong, maybe we need to reconsider, they're like, well, we know that there can't be a God, materialism is true, so therefore we just have to somehow change our opinion, and we have to take this theory that we mocked, and now we make it our own. In fact, when I was young, I remember the way it was taught is this idea that the world was expanding, and we're going to find that it's expanding and then retracting, and matter is eternal, and it expands and attracts, and it blows up again. And well, now we're finding that no, that science shows that it's accelerating its expansion, that there was a one-time work of creation, that there was this one time when everything was created from the central point, and it's been expanding out ever since then. Now, okay, here's the problem. Now, they've tried to make that their own, but they ridicule then Christians for believing that there's an almighty God who created everything. They say this is unscientific. Now, their explanation is that nothing has created everything. In one moment, there was nothing, and suddenly out of this nothingness had created an explosion that created all the material of the universe. Now, let me ask you, how scientific is that? Because we know from science, from experience, from what we do, think of all the experiences that we have, all the scientific experiments that you've done that have proven how often nothing creates something, right? We know that from science. Nothing creates something all the time. And yet they say that's science. Now, obviously, I'm being a bit sarcastic. But let's use the scientific method here. Every time in our experience that there is something, it is the result of something else. Something creates it. Now, if we don't start with the presupposition of materialism, if you start with materialism, there is no God, there's no possibility of God. The only other chance is that nothing created everything. But if you start with the chance that there could be no God or there could be a God, and we have this world that existed, that someone created it, was it more likely that there was a God that created it or that there was a nothing that created it? Okay, now it gets a whole lot worse for them because you not only have the origin of the universe, but the organization of the universe. Again, the Bible speaks about in the beginning was the heaven and the earth. The earth was without form and void, and darkness was over the face of the deep, and the Spirit was hovering over the face of the waters. And the rest of Genesis talks about God organizing the universe. Okay, now, evolution says it's all by chance. Now, here's the problem. Science has proven that our universe is incredibly, what they will say, the terms they talk about is it's finely tuned with incredible precision. That there are all these laws, and I wish I can get in, I barely understand them, but I wish I could get into even what I do understand, that there are all these laws that are incredibly precise, that there's like millions of possibilities, and that only if we were in this one, one possibility would the universe work. And it's multiple of them. Some scientists have compared it to like a control board where there's 1,000 dials, and each one of these dials has 1,000 possible settings. And if one of the settings is just one tick off, the whole thing doesn't work. Somebody has even compared the chance. He said it's like if you had the universe, and the universe was filled with grains of sand, not just our Earth, the whole universe, and you just dropped by chance in the universe and picked one grain of sand, you had to pick the right one or else the whole thing wouldn't work. It's impossible to happen by chance. But here's what's amazing is that it did. The universe works. We're in this universe that is incredibly finely tuned. Now, again, now here the scientists not only say, well, nobody created everything, but it's not only that, but nothing created everything with this incredible precision. That it's just by chance. I mean, I remember reading like Richard Dawkins, and he says, we're just incredibly, he acknowledges, this is like impossible, but it shows that we're incredibly super, super, super lucky. All the evidence, like the one guy said, the evidence is against us. We don't believe this because of the evidence. We believe it because if there is no God, that's the only other possibility. It happened by chance. And so therefore, the fact that we exist shows how lucky we were. And the thing is that the evidence is totally against it. So again, look at the whole question of science. Look, when you look at, when you say science, repeatable, what we observe, repeatable experiments, when you have something that is that finely tuned, that kind of design, is that the result of accident? You got to be foolish to believe it's accident. What's more likely, that you have an all-powerful God that did something that miraculously by his hand, by his design, or that nothing came out of everything, and that nothing was so lucky that it just so happened to be this perfectly designed one in, you know, numbers we can't even state chance that it, we're just that lucky it worked that well. My friends, the heavens declare the glory of God. It's not only there. Let's go to another problem, the problem of the origin of biological life. When Darwin first proposed his theory, he believed the first living cell was extremely simple. And, you know, it was just this, you know, goblin of, you know, of carbon dioxide and oxygen, and it was just, you know, protoplasm. And so they believed it was really simple. And so when he developed this theory, his theory was that you have this really simple cell that started by accident, that it just came to life of its own, and then the simple developed into the more complex. In fact, in chapter 6 of his book, here's what he said about his theory. If it could be demonstrated that any complex organ existed which could not possibly have been formed by numerous successful slight modifications, my theory would completely break down. So if it's shown that there's something complex that didn't, you can't build up from the simple, then my theory's wrong. Well, here's the problem. You know what we find out about the cell? It is incredibly complex. It's, you know, his whole theory is you can't start with the complex, but the cell is far more complex than you could ever imagine. You know, they say it's like, you know, people have described it, it's like a production plant where it not only is producing, but it's fixing itself, it's moving, mixing new, and making new plants. It's far more complicated than any building, any production line that any human has ever made. Not only that, but it's filled with information. At the key of life is information. DNA, they say the DNA code has more information than a whole set of encyclopedias. And that this information had to be coded. And what you have with evolutionary biology is, well, it just all happened by accident. You know, if you have one letter wrong, it doesn't work. And the fact is, this whole thing happened by accident? No. The fact, and if you look at Darwin's whole thing, if it be shown that there's something complex that didn't come from the simple, my theory is wrong. You know what? Science proves that his theory is wrong. Evidence proves that his theory is wrong, even by Darwin's own words. One more, and then we're going to have probably not get to the rest, but one more, and that's the diversity of biological life. The Bible teaches that God made everything to produce after its own kind. You know, that you have this, you know, evolution says that, no, it's not that. It's through random selection. Now, here's what you have to realize, and here's part of where the confusion comes. A lot of times we say, well, do we believe in evolution? Well, no, I don't believe in evolution. Well, don't you see that there are certain things that you have, you know, that finches have evolved, or this, have, you know, and you'll hear Tumps talk about animals, how they've kind of adapted. And here's what I need you to realize, is that when we talk about evolution, there's two different kinds that are two very distinctive things. One is macroevolution, one is microevolution. Microevolution is adaptation within a species. So it's the ability for things to adapt to its circumstances. And there's a lot of evidence of adaptation. The second is macroevolution. That's the ability for things to evolve from one species to another. To you know, almost to put it in a picture, it's this idea that, you know, macroevolution is the idea that you have a lizard that evolves and develops wings and becomes a bird. Microevolution is that you have lizards that change colors, that change sizes, that adapt to their circumstances. Now, the thing is that there is a bunch of evidence for microevolution. Now, what has happened is that people will say, well, because we see adaptation, well, therefore, we need to look at it, and we've got to say, well, therefore, it probably evolved from species to species. That's a whole Darwin's theory. People will look at the evidence of evolution. Well, I agree with evolution if you're talking microevolution, but do you want to know how much evidence there is for macroevolution? None. You know, we keep trying to find these, and Darwin said, well, we're going to find, you know, the fossil evidence. We just don't have enough. We're going to find these fossil evidence that are going to show how these species evolved from one to another, and we've never found it. We still aren't. They're still looking. And in spite of the fact that they said, okay, what we're going to do is we're going to find this, and we're going to see this, and this is going to prove us right, and when it was proven wrong, you know, they don't come back and they say, well, maybe our theory was wrong. They say, well, no, now we need to figure out a new way. So now it's, you know, now it's punctuated equilibrium. It's this idea of, you know, that we've got to have this change happen suddenly, even though it goes totally against our theory, but we've got to somehow get an explanation that allows us to still reject God, still hold our opinions, even though all the evidence proves that it's wrong. My friends, I don't believe it just because the Bible says it. I believe it because it's affirmed in God's revelation through nature if you hold two sides, which one is more consistent? Now, we're going to come back to some of the last part next week, but I'm just going to end with this last one, which is the idea of about the status of mankind. See, evolution says that we're not special. You know, we're just lucky slime that we're going to develop it more next week. But let me mention this. You know what's happening right now in the courts? You have a group that is suing the Bronx Zoo for Happy the Elephant, because Happy the Elephant should be declared a person. I'm serious. I mean, they're suing for the personhood of Happy the Elephant. Now, this is evolutionary theory that is saying that there's no difference between, you know, elephants or chimpanzees and us. Now, they might say, well, we're trying to elevate animal kingdom. We're trying to help animals be treated better. That's not what it, in reality it is. You know what it is? It's saying that we're no different than the elephant. It's taking us down. We're not special. Humans aren't special. There isn't anything unique about us. We're just a little more evolved than everything else. And you see in our culture, in our world, this crisis of meaning that grows from this teaching. And I want you to tell you, the Bible teaches what? That God created man in his own image, in the image of God, he created him. Male and female created them. He gave us dominion. And not only are we special, and not only are we unique, not only do our rights and all that grow, we're going to look at some of that next week. But I want you to realize that the whole of the Bible is a story about this God who is the creator pursuing us to have a relationship with us. That we're not only special in the context of creation, in context of our world, but you are special in the eyes of Creator God. That he sees not only the value of who you are and that you were created in his image, but he sees the value of your soul. That even if you have run away from him, even if you've rejected him, he said, I love you enough that I'm going to pursue you, and I'm going to send my son Jesus Christ to die on the cross for your sins, to pay the price. I'm going to pay the price to have a relationship with you. My friends, you are of incredible value. And I hope and pray that as we look at this, it's not only seeing the science of this, but the practical reality of what it means. Do you understand that you have a God who created you, that has pursued you, that wants a relationship with you, that invites you to have a faith that's based in reason, that's based in logic, goes beyond it, but it's based in truth, but ultimately is a spiritual, scientific, historical reality that if you embrace it, it's the ultimate truth that reshapes your life, this relationship with God. Do you understand that he's pursued you, that this morning that he's pursued you, and he invites you to this relationship? Thanks for joining us. If you have any questions about what we talked about, Jesus Christ, our church, or anything else, connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, or by email. We'd love to hear from you.